Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
95.7 The Game NFL Insider Peter King appearing on the Dial Pad guest line. Peter is brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Visit Friedman'sAppliance.com today. Peter, thank you for joining us here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. We were just talking with Nick Bosa, and he mentioned that there was a really bad rookie night skit. That sounds like something you and the investigative journalists need to get into. How bad was that opening night skit?
Boy, I'm glad I don't. I'm glad I'm not Schefter or Rappaport or Mort tonight. I let them handle the big stories. I just go for the little things now.
Well, it's no little thing that the 49ers are looking at a 3-0 record going into their bye week. They couldn't have done any better than that. And with all due respect to people who want to say they haven't played anyone yet, they're playing professional teams. They had a long way to go, and 3-0, I think, is a little bit of a surprise for even the most optimistic of fans. Where do you see this team sitting in, not just necessarily power rankings, but where you thought the Niners would be and what you've seen through 3 weeks, Peter? Where are they?
Well, I mean, seeing that I picked them, to be a pretty good team and make the playoffs, I'm not shocked, and I'm not shocked at any specific game. I mean, I'm a little surprised that both of their first two games on the road in the Eastern time zone, they won fairly handily. And look, you play the Steelers, it comes down to the end of the game with or without Ben. I mean, I don't think it was a great game for them. Obviously, they turned it over way too much. But I think what continues to impress me about this team mostly, and look, clearly they finally have the defensive front that they want, that they've been searching for. And, to be able to get Ford and Bosa to come in. Look, what's amazing to me is that last year with hardly any help on the outside, DeForest Buckner had 12 sacks. And now I mean, we'll see what he does this year. He's off to a normal start. I think he's got two. But I think the fact that there is an outside pass rush is huge. And the other thing that is just so interesting to me is that this is a team that is supposed to have a mediocre offensive line now that Joe Staley is gone for at least half the season. And they got two guys who collectively are rushing for 5.7 a carry, who should have been the third and fourth running backs on this team. And so I think that you got to give an awful lot of credit to be able to run the ball, or for their success in being able to run the ball as well as they have.
Do you give that credit more to offensive linemen we were underrating and running backs we were underrating, or to Kyle Shanahan and the offensive coaches for the way they run the ball?
I think it's a combination, but I would give an awful lot of credit to the scheme and to how exactly they're doing it. The one thing that I've always thought about Shanahan, and one of the reasons why when I talk to, there are two veteran head coaches in this league who in the off season, maybe at the combine, maybe at the league meetings or whatever, they absolutely will look up Kyle Shanahan, and they'll want to talk to him about both offensive and defensive football. Because I think if you're a good offensive coordinator, you have to study everybody's defense because you have to figure out how to beat it. And so I just think he's a guy who understands when he is slightly outmanned or slightly, when he's playing the 46th and the 52nd guy on the roster at key positions, let's say, you better have a pretty good head on your shoulders as to how to fix it.
Got to turn your mic on, Ray.
Do I really have to?
If you want Peter to hear you, absolutely.
Well, Peter doesn't want to hear me. Speaking of the 49ers, let's go to Jalen Ramsey. The reason why we bring that up, obviously, is because Akello Witherspoon is out. It's going to be out for at least a month, maybe more. Has there been any indication that Jacksonville has softened its asking price? And if so, how soft would it have to get for the 49ers to want to be players?
My opinion, Ray, it would have to be a one and a one alone. I don't know that they or anybody is going to trade a lot more than a one. Maybe a one plus, like if you're Philadelphia, you've got three young corners who you like. If you trade a one plus one of those corners, that might be reasonable. Here's the biggest problem, Ray. And the reason why, if you're John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and Adam Peters, and you are trying to figure out whether it'd be smart to trade for Jalen Ramsey, you have to understand that you're probably trading to get a player for 1¾ years. This is probably not, unless you pay an absolute ransom at some point next year or during free agency, unless you pay an absolute ransom, you're not going to keep him for 7 or 8 years. And look, some people might say, good, if we could have him for 2 years, if we could have, you know, Witherspoon, Sherman, and Ramsey together for 2 years, we'll take that. And then we will worry about 2021 and 2021. Because I think, and this is all just me trying to read the tea leaves, Ray, I think that Jalen Ramsey, to try to encourage people to trade for him, is willing to not hold out before next season and is willing to play the fifth year of his deal. So, in other words, he'll be okay with coming out and playing in 2020 under his existing contract. And then I think everybody, there's so much unknown about 2021. And when I say unknown, I mean because there's going to be a new collective bargaining agreement in 2021. We don't know right now whether the cap is going to go up, going to go way up, whether they will eliminate, let's say, the franchise tag and will allow true free agency the way they have it in baseball. So we don't know that right now. And so I think Jalen Ramsey doesn't want to sell himself short. I think he wants to hit free agency. This is just my opinion now. I've not talked to Ramsey, so I don't know this for sure. But I believe he wants to hit free agency in 2021. So what does that mean? It means that what you can get for Jalen Ramsey is less. Like, if right now you knew that you could do a deal with Jalen Ramsey that would keep him on your team for the next 6 years, I think it's fairly reasonable to pay 2 ones for Jalen Ramsey. But if you can't get any assurance that you're going to have him beyond the end of the season 2020, then I don't think it's really worth very much more than a first-round pick. So, and I'm not even sure that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan would advocate paying a one at that point for him.
Just quickly, to jump back to something you said there, do you think there's a real possibility that the franchise tag could be eliminated? Because that would...
I don't have any idea. But the fact is, no one knows.
Okay.
So what if the franchise tag is eliminated? Let's just say, if that is the one thing standing between the NFL and a deal with the players. And I don't think it will be the one thing that'll stand between, because it affects so few players. And I think the rank and file are not going to be that enthusiastic about basic, because more than half of the franchise tags would go to quarterbacks anyway. So I don't think they're going to be that interested in protecting the earning potential of quarterbacks. So again, I don't know what's going to happen, but nobody knows. What is the one thing that the NFL players really want to hold out for? You know, they get right now about 47% of the gross. And I've been told that the players, if you said to them right now, we'll give you 51 or 52%, well, they'll make the players that make a deal tomorrow. But I don't think the owners are going to go above 50% at all. I think they're pretty steadfast that they don't want to do that. All that means is that the owners are going to have to look for something, as unpleasant as it might be. They're going to have to look for something, some bone to throw the players to get this deal done, if monetarily the deal is not all that much better than the current 10-year deal is.
Peter King here on 95.7 The Game, talking about 3 weeks of NFL that have come and gone. We've seen holding officiated differently in the first 2 weeks than it was really in the third week. What can you tell us about that, Peter?
Well, you know, as has been widely reported, Al Riveron had a conference call on Saturday with his 17 referees, who are the de facto crew chiefs of the 17 officiating crews, and basically said, take it easy on the holding calls, because there have been some ridiculously phantom, marginal, ticky-tack holding calls in the first 2 weeks. And look, whether he makes this call or not, I can tell you of about 100 times in the last, and I'm exaggerating, there have been 10 or 12 things that get called one way in the preseason and in week one, two, or three. And then they put the fear of God into players, and so they don't call them anymore. Case in point, last year, with the lowering your head to initiate contact, that was called, I think, 49 times in the four preseason games. And then it was called very, very seldom, whatever the number was, just very seldom in the regular season. So the NFL basically was the league that cried wolf last year on the lowering your helmet to initiate contact penalty. They kept saying, hey, you better watch out, we're going to call this, and then they didn't call it. They do that every year. They try to basically put the fear of God into you in August and early September, and then they settle down. So I think that's what this is, essentially, and I think that the NFL just dreaded and hated the fact that this came out, because it sort of exposes a dirty little secret in the officiating community, and that is that if we think there are too many flags and it's really affecting the quality of play and it's affecting how people are consuming the games and whether they might be turning the TV off because they're disgusted at the 22 yellow flags in the first three quarters, then they're going to say, hey, take it easy on the flags. And that's basically what they did last Saturday.
They've done that several times in the last few years, though, about emphasizing one thing and then pulling back after a couple of weeks. Does that not give the appearance of a league that basically is now just throwing things against the wall to see if they'll work, and using the early part of the regular season as their lab work?
Yeah, exactly. That's precisely what it is. Because they don't have, like in baseball, you have 5 weeks of every day you have exhibition games. Maybe it's even 6 weeks, I don't know. But you have all of these exhibition games, so if you're trying out something with the strike zone, you've got 13 or 14 sets of lab rats every day for 6 weeks. So you're going to be able to find out quite a bit about what you're intending to put into play. But in the NFL, first of all, you know, there's only 64 preseason games total. And because there are only 64 preseason games total, what you end up, and the starters hardly play at all, you don't have that time during the preseason, as much as you would hope you'd have. You don't have that time to be able to put some, experimental calls in a test tube. So then you have to wait till the start of the season. And then the league puts its collective finger in the air to see which way the wind is blowing. And they listen to everybody. They listen to us. They listen to the fans. They listen to the TV ratings. They listen to Twitter. And I'm telling you, they do. And they don't use any one single thing to try to make a decision. But, you know, it's a great example the other day on a totally different topic. When Robert Klemko of Sports Illustrated wrote the story about Antonio Brown's you know, this woman who accused him of sexual harassment when she was painting in his home in Pittsburgh. And Robert Klemko found out that there were some threatening text messages being left for her. Well, you know, the NFL, what happened within 24 hours? Antonio Brown had been warned by the NFL to cut it out, and then the New England Patriots cut him. So, you know, I'm not in any way saying that the press runs the league, but I am saying that the NFL listens to everything, and they react when they feel they have to.
You know, Peter, it feels like Antonio Brown has just crossed over into the realm of this isn't even a football topic anymore. He is self-destructive in a way that feels clinical. The conversation that the NFL had with his original accuser, the woman who said that he sexually molested her three different times, that took place in NFL offices, was that the straw that broke the camel's back, the Klemko piece you just brought up? And did the league call the Patriots and say enough is enough, or did
that was the one? Because understand this, until that, everything else was in the investigation process. Everything. And now they had Antonio Brown sending a text message or multiple text messages in a group text. And they could then rightly find that he was trying to intimidate a potential witness in an NFL case involving Antonio Brown. And the NFL has a bylaw against that in the player behavior code. And so they could then take a deep sigh and just say, okay, now we have something solid that we can find Antonio Brown did. And in this way, we can basically call the Patriots, which is what they did, say, you know, you have to notify Antonio Brown to no longer have any contact with this woman because she is a material witness in the league's investigation against Antonio Brown. And when that happened, the Patriots said, okay, that's it. You know, the Patriots, I think, also breathed a huge sigh of relief because the NFL was on an expedited investigative process with this. It would not have taken very much longer for the NFL to say, we find enough cause in this story to be able to say we're taking Antonio Brown off the field, either on the commissioner's exempt list or some other way. But I think the NFL was very close. Maybe Antonio Brown plays another game or two max, but within a short period of time, he was going to be gone.
Do you think he'll ever play another game in the NFL?
I think we have to wait and see what these investigations find. You know, we'll see if he's right and he says I didn't do this and I never sexually assaulted this former trainer of mine from Central Michigan, if he can be found, if at least there's enough doubt in that, then he may play again. He's such a great talent, he may play. But I think if he is found guilty or if he is found culpable in the civil case, if he's found to some degree, to have some degree of culpability in this, I don't think he'll ever play again. Because any team that takes him on is going to have to deal with every woman who's a fan of that team. And I think there's one other thing. We have seen no evidence whatsoever, ever, of Antonio Brown, other than when he meekly appeared at the microphone in Alameda the day before he went on his, or 2 days before he got cut by the Raiders, when he went on the very programmed apology. I've never seen him admit anything. So the first thing he'd have to do is be a human being and say, I screwed up, I'm contrite, and I'm going to make amends for it. If he starts to say things like that and you find out he's serious, then he might play. But he has been he's been such a lout and a welcher and not a good person that I just can't believe at this point And I'm sure Drew Rosenhaus is doing the best thing for his client. But to think that any team would seriously consider signing Antonio Brown at this point, I think is insane.
Peter, can we wrap up with this? Another story from Sports Illustrated I thought was really interesting, where Calvin Johnson was just painting the Lions as incompetent boobs and cheapskates, and you talk about, you know, louts. Why are the Lions allowed to treat their best player like this? I mean, it's just, it's amazing.
Well, you saw why he left the game early.
Yeah, and I mean, but that's almost...
Exactly. I think what happened in Detroit is a big reason why Barry Sanders left 2 years before his time and why Calvin Johnson left probably 3 years before his time. He was disgusted. And again, look, these are charges by Calvin Johnson. And look, I thought the Lions statement was very equivocating. It did not deny what Calvin Johnson said at all. And the sad part of it, the real sad part of it, is that here are two all-time players for the Lions, two of the best five players in their history. Bobby Lane, and there aren't very many more. Dick Night Train Lane. Excuse me, I'm mixing up my old line.
You got to go with Jason Hansen, Golden Toe. Come on, one of the greatest Lions of all time.
Yeah, but you know, these guys are two of the top five or so Lions to ever play, and they want to have nothing to do with the franchise. At some point, when that happens with the franchise collectively has to look in the mirror and say, we are going to fix this, and they should fix it. And they absolutely should fix it with Calvin Johnson right now.
I mean, to me, that's where Roger Goodell needs to get involved, not on societal issues that, to me, are way above his mental capacity and pay grade.
Well, if Roger Goodell would appear and do or say anything, when's the last time that Roger Goodell, in the NFL's 100th season, this season of what we all thought was going to be a massive celebration. Roger Goodell has been hidden under a rock for the entire year. Did you see him in training camp? No. Have you seen him in the first 3 weeks of the season? No. You've seen him maybe in still photos or whatever, or in grainy video of him being up in an owner's box or something. But, I mean, Roger Goodell has totally abdicated the public part of his job. I don't know quite why, but it's clear that, at least from my perspective, that the years of being an absolute punching bag have made Roger Goodell gun-shy. And if I'm an owner in this league, I'm saying I don't care how you're being treated. I don't care what's going on. You got to get out and do the people's. You got to get out and be with the people. You got to advocate on behalf of our league. I mean, I'm serious. I have not seen this commissioner say a word all season.
Yeah.
Where is he?
It's
amazing. This is a time of celebration for the NFL, and the guy who should be the high holy priest in charge of the celebration is hidden in the sacristy.
Can we assume then that he sort of had enough of this job, and the only reason he's staying in at this point is to do one more TV deal, do the CBA, and then leave? I mean, are we looking at the end of him as the real commissioner of a league that doesn't seem to need
one? No question. Ray, I'm just telling you. I mean, it's now September of 2019. In September of 2022, he's not going to be the commissioner of the NFL.
Wow.
He'll be gone. He'll be up in his home in Maine or somewhere. And who will be the commissioner? I don't know.
There's no Adam Silver in waiting?
I mean, I'm sure that someone from the NFL will sidle up to Adam Silver and ask if he's interested. But I think one of the things the NFL is going to do is really cast a wide net and talk to people outside the game. I think the best candidate right now in the game is a guy who does not want the job. And it's Clark Hunt, the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs. He is Switzerland. He is very well liked by owners. He's really respected by the players on his own team. Andy Reid thinks that he's, you know, one of the greatest people he's ever met, never mind owner of a sports franchise. He'd be wonderful. But I have heard that he does not want the headache and that he believes that his future is only as the owner of the Chiefs. The only other person in the league right now who works for a team that I think would be very interesting is a guy who hardly anybody knows, but people would know the last name. It's Kevin Demoff. He's the COO of the Rams. He is extremely eloquent. He is basically run the LA franchise and run the building of this stadium. He's respected incredibly by the big money people in the game and by football people in the game. He also, I believe, would not want the job because I think he does not want to be married to football. He's got two kids, lives in LA, and I think he wants to have a little bit of a life. So, again, I don't know what's going to happen. There's four or five internal candidates in the league, but I do think they're going to end up looking outside.
And then always Condoleezza Rice's name gets thrown into the mix for some reason, right? Like, there's always, she's always about to be the next commissioner of the NFL, save college football from itself. Like, it's amazing how her name gets thrown around, but it's fascinating, Peter. That,
I mean, I don't know. You always hear her name because she's a big football fan, and I think it'd be great for the game in a lot of ways. And I think she has got an incredible presence about her. But again, I think the people who run the NFL and the people who are going to make this decision, you've got to realize that, you know, the most powerful owners in the NFL are the ones who are going to make this decision. And so you have to think to yourself, okay, what would Jerry Jones want?
Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones make this decision.
Yeah, Kraft is a little bit less powerful, but yeah, what would Bob Kraft want? What would John Mara want? He is a very respected guy. What would Art Rooney of the Steelers want? What would Jeff Lurie want? I don't know. Did I say Stan Kroenke? Stan Kroenke. What would Clark Hunt want? So I think you're going to have to get find out from all of those people what they would want and what they'd like. But I do think that, and again, look, being commissioner of the NFL is mostly a thankless job. After you serve a honeymoon period, you're going to have people shooting at you from all directions. And again, Roger Goodell waffled a lot on the Ray Rice thing and on a lot of issues that he didn't really capture and he didn't do right. But I will believe for a long time that all the people who have taken, the bows and arrows and have shot at Goodell for a long time, you could put any human being in that job at that time, and they will be second-guessed by 40% of the populace. It's exactly like the American political process right now. You are never going to find someone who's going to make everybody happy in the most popular sport in the United States.
Fascinating stuff, Peter. Thank you so much, man. This is a topic we weren't even thinking about until you brought it up, what it might hold for the NFL.
That's because my whole job is to get you guys off on silly tangents.
No, well, you did it today, man. Thank you very much, Peter. Appreciate you getting us off on this tangent. We'll come back for more tangents next week. Thank you so much.
All the best, guys. Thank you.
Good stuff. Couldn't help but notice Mark Davis and Jed York's names were not brought up as decision makers who will be picking the next commissioner of the NFL.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.